On behalf of Avanti and Carasoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, focused on headlines in cybersecurity, where Dr. Srinivas Makkamala, Chief Product Officer at Avanti, will discuss supply chain hacks and how cybersecurity professionals throughout all levels of government and the private sector are painfully aware of the risks to their own networks posed by third parties with authorized access, but have insufficient security measures of their own.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Today, we're going to have a most interesting hour examining the importance of state and local governments addressing supply chain hacks. All states have security measures in place to protect their own data and systems. But as cybersecurity threats and attacks against governments have increased, cybersecurity professionals throughout all levels of government and the private sector have become painfully aware of the risk to their IT systems and networks posed by third parties with authorized access but insufficient security measures of their own. From citizens to third-party contractors for governments, and from customers to suppliers for private sector, if the entity reaching into your system is not secure, you're at risk. Favorite targets are supply chains, because by hacking into these, they gain access to company data, as well as the ability to often breach other customers' networks, gain access to people using services, and even disrupt things that are attached to the network. Our guests are joining us to discuss the importance of cybersecurity of providers and suppliers of services and goods that connect and affect the supply chain across state and local government. Joining us today first is Meredith Ward, the Director of Policy and Research for the National Association of State Information Officers, or NASIO. Let's also welcome Tim Oliver, the CIO for Horry County, South Carolina. Now, with Meredith and Tim, we have Brian Pate, the Cyber Supply Chain Risk Management Standards Lead at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, better known as CISA. And with us from the private sector today is Bill Herod, the Chief Technology Officer of the public sector at Avanti. Now, before we kick off, why don't each of you share with us a little bit more about yourselves and your organizations and what you do there? Meredith, let's start off with you.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for having me. As you said, I am the Director of Policy and Research for NASIO. NASIO's members are all 50 states and 5 territories, and our chief members are the CIOs in all states.
That's pretty fantastic. You have your hands full bringing everybody together and getting them to sit at the table and come to agreement a lot of times, I bet.
Yeah, we do. And we're pretty lucky that our folks are pretty focused. Their number one priority is cybersecurity, obviously kind of what we're talking about today. So they're generally all in agreement, but all the states run differently. We like to say if you've seen one state, you've seen one state. So that's kind of NASIO's motto.
That's perfect. I love it. All right. Well, Tim, how about you?
I'm the CIO for Horry County, South Carolina. For many of you, that means Myrtle Beach. So we're a medium-sized local government, but support about 3,000 users, almost 5,000 endpoints these days. And a number of our smaller municipalities are also part of our public safety solution, so we're also accessing our network besides a number of outside vendors that support our line of business application. So it's an ever-changing landscape for us in local government.
I can imagine it is, without a doubt. But also, you know, when you talk about Myrtle Beach, when you have visitors, you're during season down there, I bet you your 5,000 endpoints can increase rapidly to more like 50,000.
Or maybe 500,000. it really increases drastically, so yeah.
So that makes you and this session really important, and your aspect and what you're going to share with us is going to be great. Thank you. Now, with Meredith and Tim, we also have Brian Pate, the Cyber Supply Chain Risk Management Standards Lead at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Brian, why don't you share with us a little bit more about your background?
Okay. Thanks, Mike. So currently I work for CISA. As Mike mentioned, I work with the standards developed around cyber supply chain risk management and what that actually means for the federal departments and agencies. because, you know, many are just trying to figure out what the acronym means at this point. So we're trying to get the word out there. But we're also starting to engage a little bit with states. But before we actually go full on, you know, we want to make sure that whatever we bring to the states is something usable by them. So hearing the discussions back and forth and looking at the questions will be key for me, so I can take that back and have, you know, better information to go off of when helping out states. My background is Intel in cyber, working with DoD, trying to integrate satellite cybersecurity into satellite systems, as well as IC with the FBI and NSA and CIA. So that's about it, Mike. Back over to you.
That's outstanding. It'll be great to hear from you today. So with us is Bill Herod also. Bill, you want to give a little bit of your background?
Sure, Mike. Thanks very much. So my name is Bill Herod. I'm the public sector CTO for Avanti. Avanti is a U.S.-based enterprise software company with a mission to help state agencies, federal agencies, discover, secure, manage, and service your IT assets, and to enable the Zero Trust Enterprise. A lot of our listeners have probably never heard of Avanti, but they likely know some of the solutions that have come together under the Avanti brand. Before Avanti, I was the public sector CTO for Mobile Iron, a mobile device management and a threat defense vendor, when we were acquired by Avanti. And Avanti has also acquired Pulse Secure for VPN and secure network access, RiskSense, providing risk-based vulnerability management, ShareWell for IT service management and asset management, and the Avanti Neuron solutions provide IT service management, IT asset management, automated discovery, which will be important in this discussion today, patch management, and zero trust access controls. And before Mobile Iron and Avanti, I was with Deloitte as part of their public sector cybersecurity practice, managing accounts at GSA, the Postal Service, IRS, and NIST, and I've been working in cybersecurity for more than 25 years, providing identity, authentication, authorization, and access control solutions for federal government and Fortune 500 companies alike. And I told the panel earlier, I started out my career in federal law enforcement, so I'm happy to be a part of this panel today. Thanks, Mike.
Wow, thank you. And with this great group, it's definitely going to be quite an interesting hour. I'm really looking forward to this. So let's start right away with you, Meredith, if you don't mind. A real concern today is that smaller organizations that often don't have the budget to develop robust security capabilities can be used as a conduit to target downstream customers as part of a larger attack. So how do we help our partners in the supply chain help themselves and thus protect ourselves?
Mike, thanks. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the 2020 SolarWinds incident, this is a prime example of this. Most, if not all, states were affected, plus many more other government and private sector entities. And what that really highlighted is how massive the issue is, and that not, you know, one entity or not even the 50 states combined can handle it on their own. But what I think this really makes the case for is a whole estate or whole of government approach to cyber, where every government entity, every private sector entity, higher ed, healthcare, excuse me, et cetera, has a role to play in cybersecurity. I think that's honestly, it's the only way that we're going to all be able to protect ourselves by knowing that cyber is a shared responsibility and, you know, centralized cyber operations are generally more secure when we work together. We're generally more secure, and so I think that's honestly the only way forward.
Well, you know, there's a lot of resources out there that can do that. Brian, would you like to add on? I see that you're maybe have something else to add to that.
Yes, what I can do is definitely agree with what Meredith has said, especially with SolarWinds. That was kind of like the kickoff of this multi-decade problem that has been ignored. So it's from a federal perspective, it seems like to me that it's going to be a lot easier and the federal government is going to have to step up and start looking at states and how we can help them mitigate these issues that we are identifying. And it's not just in SolarWinds, right? Some of the biggest attacks right now are coming that we're starting to see are API related. So recently we had a couple of supply chain attacks like Log4j, Colonial Pipelines, Caseus, which was specific to states, aka Florida. So yeah, Meredith, I agree with you 100%.
That's great. I know that more capabilities and more support is becoming available. That's going to be good to see as we go forward. All right, Tim, what are some bottlenecks or obstacles in supply chains for identifying and prioritizing risks?
Well, I think part of the bottlenecks for us anyway as a local government are kind of twofold. One, as I mentioned, majority of the municipalities and even in neighboring county, which are much smaller than Horry County, connect to our network. A year ago, one of those organizations was compromised, and well, actually, we've had two of our agencies compromised that all of a sudden we're the agency that's managing the security side of the house and the incident because they were too small to do that. So that's one bottleneck. These smaller agencies that don't have the resources but are either connected or part of that supply chain. And then another concern is that the bottleneck that we have is all of these cloud-based line of business systems that a lot of our departments want to use. They are reluctant to give us their security information. A department may have gotten this line of business cloud-based application that they rely on, but their security posture is unknown to us, and yet all of our users in that department are uploading and downloading documents from that system, again, that didn't go through IT, even though we're a consolidated IT shop. Those things are still out there that we're constantly chasing our tail on. As mentioned earlier, the Log4j incident, we're having to check with, 100 vendors on what their liability footprint and problems were from incidents like that. So we can be directly impacted because all of these other vendors in our supply chain could have been impacted. Therefore, we're chasing our tail when an incident like that occurs.
Well, it's frustrating when you're chasing your tail with something like that. Brian, do you have some aspects from CISA's point of view?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is what you don't know or what you can't see. And this potentially stems from an acquisition office, because you might have a reseller of a product that you are going to, right? Because they have marked down prices or what have you, because I know that a lot of state budgets are limited. And I believe that Tim can attest to that. But some of the things that we've been taking a look at is potentially setting up some type of clearinghouse. Now, this is not me saying that we're going to do this. This is something that we're actually looking at. But the clearinghouse would be, okay, you have the primary vendor, which would be Microsoft, okay? So there are many real resellers out there of Microsoft, or say it's a piece of hardware. Right? Maybe it's HP and somebody else is reselling that. But what you don't see are what type of information you can gather by doing just a little bit of research on who they are partnered with. So, for instance, if you look at a Huawei site or a Kaspersky site, and they list all their partners down at the bottom, and if you are acquiring from those partners, then that's something to be concerned about, right? So, to me, those are obstacles of security within the supply chain that could create bottlenecks, because now you have to take a look at, all right, I need to not buy from that vendor, I need to take a look at another vendor that I can apply more trust to. So it's a really tricky one right now, but we're hoping to get our arms around it and have something that could be available for the federal government and states to leverage whenever they go through the acquisition process.
So do you see this as something that may end up being like a CISA resource that's available on their website or a publication that you may be putting out in the future, sometime in the future?
I would feel better if it were a 3PAO. That way I don't have to deal with the legal ramifications of it being something that CISA owns. I would just rather have it in that lane.
Like a hosted site that everybody can sort of add to or share to or something like that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. It's a very interesting idea to move forward with. I see one of our listeners just asked that is there something that we're doing in order to be able to trace the source of attack that's being bounced around the world? I know we've gotten a lot better with that. Do you see anything in particular related to that has gotten better in the near past?
So the question is, go ahead.
Traceability, basically.
Traceability of an attack, right? That's a very good question, and one that and many others have been working on for many years, such as NSA, CIA, FBI, CISA now. So I don't know if I can provide you a good answer other than I know people are working on the traceability of this, but then again, you have to look at it in two different perspectives. One is the, I want to be more secure. And then you have the other organizations, which are, I need to know more about the attacker to better protect the federal government from these happening in the future. So it's kind of a give and take. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a very good point. And the thing is the government being able to do that and the agencies that aren't doing that actively, they're actually as an outsource of that is providing the support to the local counties and state governments too, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Bill, let's turn to you. You know, today's work environment is a mix that includes a large teleworkforce now, especially after the COVID pandemic, and it's directly proficiency our supply chains. So how can AI, ML, and even deep learning help us better secure our supply chains within these hybrid environments and also help us prioritize our modernization, maybe?
Sure. Thanks, Mike. So I think it goes back to something that Tim mentioned, right? And securing the supply chain really requires that we understand what has access to our enterprise networks. He was talking about other counties that connect to his network. But it includes mobile devices, things like we've used during COVID, any remotely connected devices, IoT devices that Brian mentioned, the edge, and the devices of our business partners and vendors and other counties that might connect. And one of the key priorities for modernization is how are we doing discovery? So discovery is a critical first step, and it includes active discovery, passive discovery, automated discovery for what is new or has changed. We need to do that endpoint and IoT discovery, and we need to collect all of that asset inventory into a repository, a database, and then enrich that asset inventory with the software bill of materials to be sure that we understand what software is and should be running on the network. And finally, we need a way of being able to securely process and ensure that software updates are tested, be able to do it in a controlled sandbox environment, and that the behaviors of those new software updates are validated before they are scheduled to update devices on the network. The the automation and machine learning can play a significant role in making that process more efficient and helping us to baseline software behavioral characteristics and detect anomalies. One of the anomalies with SolarWinds was that it created a command and control channel to go back outside the organization across the internet, and a communications channel was open. So we need to be able to detect that before we put it out on the network. And to be able to detect that anomalous activity and then remediate it through response automation and playbooks. And I think the ability to do that proactively and get in front of it is a key piece of being able to address this supply chain risk and being more proactive about controlling what we put on the network.
Hey, Bill.
I've got
a quick question for you. I agree, automation. But my question is more towards Tim, since this is more, you know, something that he may deal with day to day. So, Tim, how are you situated to be able to perform this level of analysis within your network, your environment?
It's a struggle. I mean, when you talk about, we have currently, the security team is four individuals, and with the data and the logs that we're collecting on a regular basis, the only way we're able to even begin to do that, especially as we move forward, is with AI and ML. It's just too much for, I don't care how big the team is at a local government. And again, I probably find myself fortunate that I have four dedicated security people. Now, they don't have all the time in the world to be looking and examining these logs. So only with AI and ML are we even going to be able to begin to address this issue as the organization continues to grow.
I'll add from a state perspective, and by the way, the fact that you have four FTEs at local government, that's amazing, because some states might only have one or two more than that. But states are doing the same thing. There's absolutely no way for actual people to sit down and get a handle of this. So AI is a lot more common. But I'll tell you that most CISOs will tell you that they're not 100% confident that they know everything that's connecting to their network. So, again, lots of room for improvement here, in state government at least.
I was just going to ask Meredith about the interactions with MS ISAC, multi-state ISAC, and potentially how they could help here.
So, you know, it's interesting. I think that the biggest thing, certainly MS ISAC is a great partner and helpful to states, but I think each individual state, the bottom line is, has to get an idea of what and who is connecting to their networks. And like I said, I just don't think that every state has a handle on that. As far as, you know, how MS ISAC can help, I think really it is the successes that I've seen are products, AI products, and things like that that have really helped states and that CISOs have really sung the praises of. So I don't really know how to answer that question right now, but it is something that CISOs continue to work on.
I can go ahead and real quick also on MS ISAC, is that it's a great attack point of view, but as Meredith mentioned, it's almost virtually impossible for us to identify all of the devices, no matter how hard we try, that are connecting to our networks and our vendors' networks. That's virtually impossible. The attack base and the attack vectors are great information from MS ISAC, but you know that only goes so far as to identifying all of the other possibilities that are out there from our own connected devices.
You know, this all gets back to what Bill was saying to start with, is that it's the inventory of things, people, things, software, everything that's attaching or on your network that's on there. It's so critical to have that, and it's so hard to get it in detail. MS ISAC and CISA have some great wealth of resources available to the state, local education, and governments that are out there, such as teams and scanning and phishing and targeting and things like that. And that's great for protection, but it's that inventory that you have to get. Am I right, Bill?
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think part of it is understanding the identities. It's what we call non-person identities, so the identity of the device, the identity of the user, tying that that device and user together, binding it with their credential, and then having strong access controls to do the authentication and authorization for what that combination of user and device are allowed to access, what transactions they're allowed to initiate, and this really becomes a part of the zero trust implementation, where there's no inherited trust, and we have the ability to provide very fine-grained access controls down at the level of the transaction or the API call, and being able to manage that so that we have a better handle on who and what is on the network and what is happening.
You know, and this leads us really kind of into our next question with Meredith, is that, Meredith, given the huge impact of operational technology on supply chain operations, how important is cybersecurity within the IoT world for protecting our supply chains? I mean, maybe programs, automation, AI blends into this. Almost anything can go, right?
Yeah, and if I could take a real quick detour, I saw a really great question in the chat about third parties sharing security posture. So someone asked about sharing security posture when using vendors. I'll tell you that I don't know about laws, but this has to be managed within a contract. And happy for the person who asked the question, if you want to follow up with me, I'm happy to talk more about that. But this is really highlights the importance of the procurement process and having cybersecurity being baked into that process. But now I'll get back on track, Mike, and answer the question about IoT. And I think, you know, all of us have IoT devices just in our houses, except, you know, I've hesitated to get some sort of smart-enabled thermostat because of my cyber paranoia. So my chosen profession can inhibit some things in my personal life, I guess. But
it does all of us, I know.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, and we've talked a lot about this, right? So there's so many things connected to the internet, open to compromise. And states and governments as a whole have a ton of devices, and as we just talked about, we're not necessarily sure what all of those are. I'll give you a sneak peek. Every other year, NASIO does a survey with Deloitte with our cyber study. This year, we had 53 state and territorial CISOs respond, and our CISOs are telling us that exploits of vulnerabilities in endpoint devices, it's a very high threat to their state, and they're very concerned about it. So absolutely crucial that states know who and what is connecting to their networks, who has access. This is critical to protect our supply chain. And, you know, like some of the other things that I've talked about, I've really heard some mixed levels of confidence on this topic from our state CISOs. So, again, a little bit more room for improvement there.
So it's not just local government, but you're seeing it at state. And I tell you, I've seen it at the federal level also. And the neat thing about this is that two of us that are online today, you and Brian, okay, have two organizations that are critical for state and local government for being able to share that information and give best practices, I guess, out there available and share that. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if we go back to kind of the previous discussion is how can organizations like MSISAC or NASIO to an extent, although we're not an operational entity, how can we help? You know, a lot of times when there are these types of attacks, it's not just one state or one local government or one company. In fact, I saw today where a couple of state government websites were attacked and they were actually down for a little bit. So it's normally not just one entity that's experiencing this. And so that's really, I think, the key with organizations like MSISAC is getting the word out. We certainly have a practice of all state and territorial CISOs, every territory that has one. They participate in NASIO, and so really it's keeping the lines of communication open and saying, hey, this could happen to you. Also goes back to that whole of state and whole of government cybersecurity is a shared responsibility concept.
No, absolutely. In lines of communication, what an incredibly important function that is for NASIO and CISA both. I mean, it's fantastic. I appreciate it, and I hope it continues. It's just doing good. So, Tim, speaking of this, is it advisable that organizations conduct a cybersecurity review, health review of their suppliers prior to entering a contractual agreement to acquire goods of a critical nature?
My feeling is absolutely. In fact, we're getting ready to sign an RFP on a new public safety solution, and we're going to require that audit information. We have, as part of NACO, we've gotten to work with a company called Security Scorecard. This kind of goes with one of the questions in the chat. We actually can get their security rating for a vendor that we're working with. And we're looking currently in our contract to write what a minimum score would be from that security scorecard as a basis for it. Because I'll be honest with you, after the last year's cyber insurance questionnaire, I really feel that next year when our cyber insurance is due, that they're going to start holding us accountable for third-party vendors and what is their security posture for these vendors after having a major line of business system ransomware over a year ago. And the inability to get information from that vendor, the unwillingness of that vendor to share the details, and I totally understand that from a security standpoint, but as a customer of theirs who they're connected to our network and have copies of our data, it concerns me that and what their security posture is. And to me, it's going to be critical, especially if my cyber insurance next year is based on the third-party vendors that have access to my network. This past year, that survey had tons of questions about our SolarWinds posture, Log4j, the Microsoft Exchange on-prem. So not only were they asking that about us, but they're also wanting to know if our vendors were affected by that. So I think it's going to be imperative going forward that we know what the security posture is of the vendors and the line of business systems that we connect with, not only for our own security, but also the impact that it's going to have on our ability to obtain cyber insurance.
I mean, some folks would say that it could be overbearing or it could be too hard to do task to do that, but I'm thinking a new way of doing business. I mean, this is something that we actually need to start working in to our acquisition contracts. And have the wording in a contract that says, okay, you shall provide a health review of your systems and that we can then depend upon for our security. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it makes sense. And the struggle that we have right now, again, from a local government standpoint and as a county, I need to go back and I want to review our existing contracts for line of business providers,
yep.
But opening up those contract talks, the vendors don't want to do that. They don't want to open up those contract talks to begin to amend the contracts. And unless we do, an enhancement, an upgrade, or we're purchasing more solutions from them, they don't want to reopen the talks for those contracts. So in my opinion, it's imperative that any new contract requires open access to that security posture from our standpoint to make sure that we're protected.
Hey, yeah, all good points. Go ahead.
Mike, I was just going to jump in here on this a little bit because I mean, I've seen it to where states, local, even micro or small agencies have gone to eBay to purchase technology. And that's, you know, you shake your head at it, but at the same time, they're doing what they can with what they have, right?
Right.
So over the last couple of months, we've been developing a vendor attestation letter. And, you know, Tim, you may want to take a look at that. Currently, it's in our draft form, but, you know, why recreate the wheel if one is already provided to you? And I guess I have a question for Meredith. Would you look at something like this that you would want to have MSISAC potentially have a clearinghouse of these self-attestation forms that the rest of the states and communities can reach into and get information from?
You know, could be. The other thing where it could be managed is something just like through FedRAMP. I mean, I know that a lot of states, and the new StateRAMP, I don't know if folks are familiar with StateRAMP, but it's similar to FedRAMP, but exactly what it means, a little bit more geared towards states. I do think that would be helpful because it is daunting. Again, I say all the time, if this is daunting for state governments, then, you know, God bless our local, especially smaller jurisdictions who are really struggling with this. And I know, I think Claudia is going to put in the chat, I co-wrote a paper last year about integrating cybersecurity into the acquisition process. It's something I could honestly talk about forever, but I won't because procurement is somewhat boring. But, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think whatever we can do to help folks just know where to go get the answer is very important.
Well, I think these are absolutely critical phases, a new way of doing business, but I think you're right, is that it's going to be hard to go back there and open up contracts that are already in place and add it as additional. But I do see it as a migratory or evolutionary way of doing business for the future going forward. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
great conversation. Go ahead.
The federal government has decided not to do that. We're not going to go back and open up contracts. You know, we're going to start looking forward and just, you know, build it to scale because that makes more sense to us rather than going backwards.
Outstanding.
Yeah, no, from a state perspective, absolutely agree. And really, who has the resources to do that? I mean, this is government, right? We're all kind of trying to do more with less, right? So especially for the local government folks listening, I think you moving forward, you bake everything in. And then, you know, the good thing is contracts are generally renewed every year, every couple years, whatever it is. And I think that we are getting away from these giant monolithic 10-year contracts, at least states are. So another thing that can be considered.
All great points and all great issues, and definitely a basically an evolutionary way of moving forward with this, and definitely something that everyone needs to take a look at, no matter what level of government or even private sector you are, as far as baking it into your acquisitions and contracts in the future. So, Brian, that brings us to what are some low-cost ways to improve supply chain security without purchasing the expensive digital band-aids that we were talking about or that we all know about?
That's a great question. There are a lot of different ways to do it depending on how you'll be able to consume the data and what it means to you, your mission, your organization, and then the departments that are under you. You know, how do you break the silos of communication within your organization to make sure there's two-way communication? So I would say this, that CISA has a lot of resources that can be leveraged in terms of training material, in terms of artifacts that can be used. There's mailing lists of types of attack. There's also the NRMC, which is the National Risk Management Center. They provide products that you can definitely leverage. But I think at this point, until we get a government to understand how important this is for them to apply funding and resources, which is a great need right now, it's going to be digital band-aids across states and counties. Also reach out to some vendors. There are some low-cost ways that can be negotiated with them. And if you need more information on, you know, the types of vendors or what I need to have in place, or how do I, you know, I've got four people, right? Like Tim, I've got four people that I dedicate toward this. How the heck am I going to consume cyber supply chain risk management within my organization? Because it has that cyber on it, so it belongs to me. We've got a lot of documents that we've developed so far. We're very transparent with the information that we've gathered so far. Also, we have, you know, technical guidance and advice. I've got advisors, you know, so I would just like to keep the conversation going with states and local out there, and with Meredith, because I think there's definitely a partnership that we need to start melding together, Meredith, on all the information that we can bring to bear for states.
Yep. And you know, the idea of the collaboration amongst all the players is so incredibly important in this area. And it's also the not just the collaboration, but the sharing of information, the good and the bad, across all boundaries, with vendors and with agencies, with state, local, you know, tribal, territorial governments. It's just so critical that we share the information and collaborate. And utilize the tools that are out there. I mean, there's a wealth of resources out there. Like you said, the National Risk Management Center, CISA, all the parts of CISA, they're available at no cost for the basically for the smaller governments that are out there. So thanks.
Well, yep. Build your community. Build it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, build your community. Make it larger. The federal government has a lot of forums that can be leveraged on different items, such as supply chain, zero trust, critical software, software assurance. So there's a lot of information flowing out there right now that doesn't seem to be flowing down to the state level, and I'd like to see if we could remedy that. Over to you, Mike.
Outstanding. Okay, so for our next question, I'm going to start with Bill, but, you know, I'd like to really open this one up to discussion. So, Bill, what are some tools and methods available to reduce the likelihood of unauthorized modifications at each stage in the supply chain?
Well, Mike, I think there's a number of things that can happen here. So part of what Avanti is doing, and other companies as well, with the Avanti Neuron solution, is to recognize and implement orchestration, automation, and remediation into our IT service management and our IT asset management portfolio. The process for validating software at each stage in the supply chain includes that discovery process that we talked about earlier, knowing everywhere the solution runs, and then it's a process of opening a service ticket for the software update, the validation in a controlled environment that we mentioned, managing that change management process, balancing the updates with other changes and updates that need to occur in the same maintenance window, and then automating that testing and behavioral analysis of the software. What communications and service calls are there? And then reporting on the findings, creating that baseline, and updating the operational documentation. And then completing that testing, closing the tickets, and updating the logs in the inventory database. It goes back to what Tim said, right? He's got four people. So, you know, once upon a time, sounds a little bit like a fairy tale, but once upon a time, this was all done manually. And you can't do it with the amount of software that runs today or the amount of staff hours that are available. So we have to be able to automate it, and we have to leverage our trained staff to verify the results and oversee the processes. But really looking at validating the behavior of the software, and then comparing it to what the producer, the vendor of that software, has said is the not only the hash value, but the behavior, and comparing that, and then doing the attestation to say, yes, we've tested this, we know how it's going to act, and begin to then roll it out and do the implementation. And I do think that there's some ability to not only automate and orchestrate this at the state and local level, but to share some of that as well, so that you can develop that community where they can say, you know, we're working on this. This is the steps that we're taking, and to be able to share some of those results.
That's absolutely fantastic. You know, does anybody else want to join in?
I can jump on that one, Mike.
Go for it. Go for it.
That's a very big question that you asked, because the life cycle of the supply chain from inception to, I guess, destruction, right? So there's a lot of things to consider there. The first thing that I would consider is, you know, taking a look at the supplier and how they, if it's software, how they perform their DevSecOps. You know, there needs to be an evaluation of that so you can measure the risk you're willing to accept or deny. So we've developed contract language around that could potentially be used. We've developed a cloud language that could be used as well. Also, attestation letters. You know, you want to be able to acquire as much of that information about the vendor as possible. Then you talk about pedigree, right? Does the company have good standings? And if you don't have a tool or capability, you have a phone, right? Somebody out there has had to have purchased this product. Are they satisfied with it? You know, that's a way to get around buying a $1.2 million capability. Stay away from third-party resellers because you really don't know what you're getting. Go to the source. So those are things that I like to talk about. And when it comes to SBOMs, right? People struggle with SBOMs. What do I do with it? Why am I asking? Vendors are saying, why do you need it? Well, there are many different reasons why you may need an SBOM, because it's going to help you reduce your risk that you're willing to accept, right? So within an SBOM, it could give you licensing information, which is good to know. You want to make sure the license is within good standings, not expired, or make sure that it is actually there. You also want to make sure that acquisitions is tracking these things. Cybersecurity has a stake in this as well, because if there's a SolarWinds in the future, hey, did we buy this product? Yep, and here's the SBOM of information, making sure it's machine readable. But here's the SBOM that we have, and here's the information that you're looking for. And that would potentially reduce the time to respond, because now you know where it is, who has it, and you're able to do something about it then. So those are just a couple of the things that stand around this question. You could probably have a 4-hour session around your question here, Bill, or Mike. No.
Yeah, Bill. Well, I think that's really true, and I think it's something that we need to leverage across all software. You know, we look at Microsoft just had two. Highly critical zero-day attacks for which they don't have patches. The complexity in much of the Microsoft language and code is so difficult that it would be really hard to fully understand what all of the components are in that. So I think there is a difference. And that's often leveraged across software vendors. There are some software that agencies are just going to accept, because they have to. And I think that's one of the areas in which we really see risk that has yet to be mitigated. SolarWinds is a good example of that. Log4j was a good example of that. I think much of the Microsoft language, precludes us from getting those sorts of controls and really understanding what all the components are that make up that software library.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. Whenever you have a SBOM, most software is about 75 to 80% OSS, open source software, right? So taking that into consideration, whenever you evaluate the software, you're not going to be able to take a look at the proprietary elements. They just don't want to give away that golden egg. Most people are not going to do that, right? But that is COTS products. COTS products are going to be different. You'll be able to evaluate the entire code.
Very good point. It's excellent. And that, like you said, this discussion could go on forever. But Meredith, I'm going to come over to you. You know, we talked earlier about identity management. It's key to protection of supply chain systems. So recent changes in legal and regulatory processes for procurement and acquisitions are intended to implement identity management within supply chains. So do you see this as a critical need for supply chain security? And what are you looking for in identity credentialing and access management for things as well as persons connected to your networks?
So I'm glad you brought up this topic. Identity and access management is one of my favorite topics. I think that combined with procurement, and maybe I need to get a life, but anyway, identity, you know, what we've really seen, especially since the pandemic, as citizen expectations of increased digital services has really increased, and where we've really proven that so many digital services can be performed digitally and online, and we don't all need to go to the DMV and wait to get our licenses and things like that renewed. It's become extremely important. And so from a state perspective, both internally and externally, our states are really focusing on that. To give you another preview, next week we have another survey that's coming out of just state CIOs. And again, 51 responses there. So 51 state and territory CIOs responded. Only 6%, which is about two states, if I can do the math, have no plans to implement any sort of internal or enterprise-wide IAM solution.
That's great.
And then on the external, side, only 4% don't plan on doing a citizen-facing digital identity initiative. So what we've really seen is that what citizens want, we call it the Amazon-like experience, and of course there's a lot of barriers to that. But this is really what I see, where citizens have a one-stop shop to log in to get all kinds of state services. And in order to make that a success, we have to make sure that we know that we can verify who is signing in as the actual person. Again, with a lot of the fraud that went on just with unemployment insurance and other things during the pandemic, this becomes even more important. So for any other fellow identity nerds out there, watch out. You know, next couple years really going to be our year, I think, for identity and access management.
No, that's fantastic information. I agree with you 100% on that. I'm a huge supporter of ICAM and FICAM, and I'm looking forward to FIDO being implemented in near-term future also, which takes off one of our great risks that we have for systems that are out there. So thanks for sharing that. Well, we're just about out of time, but I'd like to get to this next question with Tim. And maybe everybody could pile in on this one also. You know, collaborating closely with other supply chain partners can help improve security, Tim. So how can data sharing initiatives via blockchain platforms help supply chain managers trust the security of their counterparts and other organizations and help prevent a cyber attack in one link of the chain from spreading up or downstream?
I think the blockchain technology is... Can you hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. The blockchain technology is one that, especially from a local government standpoint, we're slow to jump on that bandwagon. and probably mostly because of resource issues, but I definitely feel that that's the direction that we need to go, especially with sharing the information and this realizing again from the identity management standpoint that who it's coming from and what it is legitimate. I think it may take a while for local government to jump on board, but I definitely think it's direction that we need to go, especially for some of our line of business applications need to also be able to support that technology.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like more information on how Carahsoft or Avanti can assist your ransomware defense, please visit www.carahsoft.com or email us at avanti@carahsoft.com. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.